You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Wow. And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's outreached Franklin. Retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the June 6th episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. He is Daniel Galvan. We got a jam-packed show coming up for you this week as we're going to take a look back at last Friday's UFC Fight Night card that took place up in upstate New York. Marlon Moraes with an incredible knockout win. Gregor Gillespie showing that he is definitely one of the top prospects in the lightweight division. Plus, we'll talk about what the future holds for Jake Ellenberger. Also talk about who's got the higher ceiling, Nathaniel Wood or Shorty Torres. Then we're going to preview UFC 225. Then I'm going to have two interviews for you. I'm going to talk to Bill Algeo, who is going to be defending the Ring of Combat featherweight title coming up on Friday night against James Gonzalez. So we'll talk to him about that matchup. Also, I'm going to talk to a fighter that I've had a chance to talk to before, and he stepped inside MMA competition for the first time since the end of 2018, Julius Angelikis, who is going to be taking on Eric Murray on Friday night at LFA 42. Plus, we're going to have our buy-sell segment. We're going to preview Thursday's PFL card, which takes place up in New York City. Plus, we're going to talk about this article that appeared on MMA Junkie recently about the early weigh-in stats, which, of course, I can tell you my phone has been blowing up the past couple of days since this article came out. So, but all that come up here on this week's edition of the podcast. Plus, we're going to tell you about a new sponsor that we do have. But Daniel, how you doing, man?
You know, Jason, this is going to be an interesting experiment because today I am out recording this podcast in nature. As today, it's been kind of a busy day. I'm adjusting to a new schedule where I'm taking the last two classes I ever will as a college student, and the free time I had today was in between my two classes. So here I am with my laptop in my lap, and I am secluded somewhere on the UTRGV college campus recording. And as people walk by and look at me as a but I will tell you this much, Jason, out here in the Texas heat, by the time we are done recording this podcast, I will be on weight. I apologize if there's any audio issues, but I will absolutely have dropped 5 pounds by the end of this podcast.
I thought you were going to tell me you're broadcasting from parts unknown.
Yeah, that's my gimmick with the wrestling recap videos, and I'm literally taking it to a medium where you can't see me. I'm way too committed to the gimmick, so I have one water bottle. We'll see if that lasts me, Jason. We will see, but as long as Mike Bone isn't doing any statistics on my weight cut during this past hour, because I may pass out.
Well, let's hope that does not happen. But, first off, we want to start this week's podcast by going back to last weekend's UFC Fight Night card, of course, headlined by Marlon Moraes versus Jimmy Rivera. And wow, I don't think anyone would be surprised that Marlon Moraes won the fight. I mean, it was a very, heading into this matchup, I mean, two of the best 135 pounders in the world. But it's just the way that he won the fight. And of course, the talk after the fight was, hey, is he next up for, potentially the winner of TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt, which you have to imagine if Cody wins that, they're going to go right to the trilogy. But, and as I thought more and more about this, and from a sporting aspect, it's got to be Rafael Sunsau if he gets through Rob Font in July. But from an entertainment aspect and for the fights that fans want to see, I don't know how you don't give Marlon Moraes the next title shot.
Is it just me, Jason, or does it feel like every time there's a UFC card, we always declare the guy who just fought an emotional high, where it's like, this guy must be the next contender. And you can make a hell of a case for Marlon Moraes compared to Rafael Sunsau. From a sporting perspective, it may not be super fair, but the thing is, Marlon Moraes is coming off a major win over a guy in Jimmy Rivera who honestly probably should have gotten a championship shot. And all I could think about when he was knocked out was how bad I felt for him, that he kind of has to go in back of the line. But this is a very exciting contender. Marlon Moraes is. He is a high level striker. He is a guy for the most part that you expect to be exciting. And when you compare his 33-second knockout over the top contender Jimmy Rivera, Rafael Asunso has his work cut out for him when he takes on Rob Font. I have a general idea, expectation that Rafael shot, but I will say, pay attention to how we react coming off that Rafael Asunso win, because I do feel like a lot of times when we're analyzing who can and cannot be the next contender, we're kind of prisoners of the moment, where every single Saturday or Friday night in this instance, we're like, this guy is the next contender. With that being said, I'm pretty sure Marlon Moraes will be the next contender after Dillashaw and Garbrandt scrap.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this just comes down to is what is the fight that fans want to see. Now, when you look at the resume of Rafael Asunso since dropping down to bantamweight in 2011, he only has one loss, and that's against TJ Dillashaw. And when you look at his strength of schedule, you know, he does have a questionable win over TJ back in 2013, a questionable win against Marlon Moraes. You know, last year he is coming off that knockout win against Matthew Lopez, but when you look at what Marlon Moraes has done in his last two fights, it's really hard to not sit there and say that he should be next up in line. But, you know, who knows? Maybe a Asunso, who, you know, look, has been a little bit of a decision machine here in the UFC. When you look at prior to that win, that knockout win against Matthew Lopez in November of last year, his last stoppage victory, you have to go back to 2013. That was a submission win against Von Lee. When you look at, in terms of his UFC fights, he has three stoppage victories. And only Matthew Lopez is still in the UFC, so I think that plays into it. But man, what a performance! And you know, and for Jimmy Rivera, I don't think he should fall that much back in line. But we'll see where he goes there. You know, if Marlon Moraes is not fighting for the title next, the fight that really sticks out to me is him versus Dominic Cruz.
That sounds like a great fight, and I think Dominic Cruz is going to be the dancing partner for whoever gets left out.
Yeah, no question. I think
against Rafael Asunso, by the way, that's going to be a tough fight. That's going to be a tough fight for Rafael Asunso. I just think for Marlon, the more and more I look at his resume and what he's done specifically in those last two performances against Aljamain Sterling and obviously Jimmy Rivera, he to me is just a much more exciting challenger. As a fan of the sport, the fight I want to see, honestly, is Marlon Moraes contend for the title over what Rafael Asunso brings. Not only because Marlon Moraes is more exciting, but despite the fact that Rafael Asunso does have a win over both Moraes and TJ Dillashaw, I honestly think Moraes is a more interesting contender because of how damn good he is on his feet and the fact that maybe even if he is hypothetically losing a championship fight, he has the ability to knock a guy out with a head kick or a knee strike at any given second. That, to me, makes Marlon Moraes an exciting contender. I think a matchup with Dominic Cruz would be more exciting than not. And then you mentioned Jimmy Rivera, Jason. I mean, how can you not feel bad for these guys? I mean, when we look at all these guys, Asunso, Moraes, Jimmy Rivera, what they've done in this sport is kind of impressive. You know, Asunso has gone 10-1 in his last 11 UFC fights, the only loss to Dillashaw, which when you really think about it is kind of absurd. Moraes has done the same thing record-wise, but not all those fights have been in the UFC. And then, of course, Jimmy Rivera, one of the few guys in modern MMA to piece together 20 consecutive wins. You feel bad for him because, honestly, he could have gotten a championship fight after the Thomas Almeida and Uriah Faber victories. He ended up continuing to contend, took on a top contender, ended up on the mat. This was a guy you were saying was one of the most underrated fighters in the UFC, and I still think he is. But there's a lot of pressure on Jimmy Rivera in his next fight not to have a similar performance because he could go from a top contender to an afterthought, and it really depends on his next fight. I mean,
For Jimmy Rivera, let me just pull up the old UFC bantamweight division because I really had not really thought about what would be next for Jimmy Rivera. Maybe it's John Dodson who just re-signed with the UFC.
That's a good fight. I really would like that. And, of course, you have a lot of the losers of these top contender fights moving forward. You know, the loser of Font and Sunset, the loser of Dillashaw, Garbrandt, those guys are going to need dance partners as well. But for Jimmy Rivera, I think he's put himself in a spot, Jason, where you can at least allow him in a high-risk situation against a top contender to get right back there against one of those losers, where you're going to have a lot to lose with two consecutive losses either way. But it, to me, I want to see Jimmy Rivera get another shot, because even though it cannot get more impressive than finishing a guy in 33 seconds, it's also the kind of thing where you don't get the greatest sense of a guy's skill, both him or his opponent. This was also an instance where he also just did get caught. With that being said, Marlon Moraes should still get plenty of credit for being a dangerous fighter.
Yeah, man, what a win by Marlon Moraes, and we'll see what happens with him next. Co-main event, Gregor Gillespie. When you talk about, I mean, look, Marlon was clearly the number one performance of the night. Gregor Gillespie has to be number two. Just a dominating fight, ends in a submission win over Vince Michelle in the second round, 4 minutes and 6 seconds. You know, and obviously when you look at the wrestling credentials of Gregor Gillespie, you can't help but sit back and think, is Gregor Gillespie ultimately the guy that could derail Khabib Nurmagomedov because of his wrestling background?
I don't want to say that quite yet, but if you're looking amongst the up-and-coming lightweights, who has the best shot? To me, it's Gregor Gillespie, and there's not even a close second. I don't want to say that today because I feel like I've waited a very long time to talk about how Nurmagomedov was the best. So I'm going to allow Gillespie that time to beat other top contenders. I mean, this is a guy who needs a fight against a top 12 lightweight for sure to validate that. With that being said, his background as a wrestler is impressive, and the way he employs that in the octagon is top notch. To go along with what he does on the feet, I think Gillespie's a fighter who has the tools that you could talk yourself into beating Nurmagomedov. But it's as simple as I want to see him compete against better competition, Jason. But again, we were talking about him going up against a fighter in Vince Pichel as a massive favorite, despite Pichel's impressive UFC record. And he, to me, dominated more than I even expected. So based on his well-rounded nature, his improvement fight to fight, I understand what you're getting at, and that this, to me, is one of the premier. I don't even want to call him a prospect anymore because he's 31 years old, and Gregor Gillespie's next fight has to be against a top 12 lightweight.
And I mean, come on, UFC, you got to sell this personality of Gregor Gillespie. I don't know if you saw this on his Instagram. Apparently, he towed up his boat to Utica to go fishing after these fights were over. I mean, you talk about just kind of selling that personality and maybe to introduce himself. I mean, I think if you're UFC, you got to kind of look at, you know, how do we kind of, you know, sell this personality of Gregor Gillespie. You know, on last week's show, we talked about how we kind of felt that no matter how the fight went down, we were going to kind of feel a little bit bad about the loser of Ben Saunders and Jake Ellenberger. And ultimately, it's a knockout win for Ben Saunders, a knee to the body. And now you look at Jake Ellenberger, 2-8 in his last 10 fights. And it led me to this question, and I'll answer it first, and I'll get your take on it. If we happen to, you know, represent Jake Ellenberger, or we were in Team Jake Ellenberger, what would be our advice? And you know what, my advice would probably be is, you know, it maybe it's just time to not do this anymore, because you now look at, you know, these three straight losses, all by TKO or KO, two of them in the first round, the other in the second round. Of course, we all remember him getting knocked out by Stephen Thompson. You know, and look, and a lot of these fights are against elite guys, but, you know, when you go in a 2-8 stretch, I think it's kind of hard not to start to have that conversation of maybe it is time to do something else.
Yeah, it's as simple as he has two victories in the last 4 years. And looking back at his last three losses, they were brutal losses. And looking back at our preview podcast, Jason, we and you suck at predicting things. If you look at our fight record, I mean, I'm not going to speak for you, but it's not very good, my fight picks. But we both predicted this was going to be sad. And once we're able to predict sad things in the cage, that to me means you should probably be retired. This isn't like the benefit of hindsight. The discussion heading into this fight was prepare for sadness, likely due to Ellenberger getting knocked out. Obviously give credit to Ben Saunders, a great performance, but Jason, it's time to hang it up. And honestly, if you're the UFC, while a lot of Ellenberger's losses have been against really high level welterweights, why would you want to actually bring him back because clearly he doesn't necessarily have the ceiling as a contender, and him out there and to get another knockout. If you are going to bring him back, though, match him up with the guy with the heavier grappling base. For the love of God, don't match him up with Ben Saunders. Don't match him up with Mike Perry. Even though he beat him, don't match him up with Matt Brown. Be more kind to him. But if you're a promotion that has to take that into consideration, making a safer matchup in a sport as violent as mixed martial arts, you should hang it up. But again, we were able to predict that. I mean, there were about two things we could predict heading into the UFC. It was the fact that this was going to be sad and that Daniel Spitz and Walt Harris is going to suck. Those are about the two things we could predict.
Man, between that fight was just, I mean, you know, at times I felt like I was watching the ultimate staring contest. Alvi Volante was another awful fight to watch. Look, you know, there was times as I watched this main card live, I wasn't able to watch the prelims live because I had to pick up my in-laws from the airport. But as I was watching the main card live, there was part of me was like, man, maybe some of these fights will end quickly so we get to this card kind of quickly. Alvi Volante was tough to watch, and Harrison Spitz was tough to watch. Julio Arce, you talk about prospects that you're looking forward to. Man, he had a great performance there. But when I look at prospects on this fight card, that you know, you kind of, it's both guys who are making their UFC debut. Nathaniel Wood, who didn't have a great first round against Johnny Eduardo, but does get the submission win in the second round, and Shorty Torres, a similar situation, does not really have a great fight, but ultimately Jared Brooks knocks him out. Unfortunately for Jared Brooks, that's become a viral sensation. But you know, when I was thinking about who's a fighter that I have the higher ceiling for, the reason I'm going to say Shorty Torres is more about the division of how quickly he could rise at 125 as opposed to how long it's going to take Nathaniel Wood to get into that upper echelon at 135 pounds.
Yeah, man. It's crazy how the two fights on Fight Pass to me were roughly 5,000 trillion percent more entertaining and interesting than the four fights on FS1 for the prelims. Like, I loved those two fights. They were fights that showcased interesting guys in Torres and Nathaniel Wood. In that first one, I mean, you had him, you had, like you mentioned, the meme. I mean, if you're a professional flip pile driver that Brooks put himself on the wrong end of, I mean, that to me, God, what was that knockout, Jason? I believe it was Gray Maynard. He shot in against maybe Rob Emerson. I don't even know.
Correct.
May have been the fight.
Yes.
I mean, there were more eyeballs on that, so that will probably live on longer. But this was more spectacular. We had acrobatics. To answer your question on who I would give the check mark to bigger prospect, despite the fact that tapping out Johnny Eduardo is probably more impressive than Jared Brooks knocking himself out, I would still put the check mark next to Torres's name. And yeah, I like how you mentioned flyweight maybe being a bit more, there's more opportunity there for a prospect, but honestly it goes more towards what these guys have done prior to their debut. Torres prior to his debut to me has been abundantly more impressive than Nathaniel Wood, so that's why I would say if I'm going to put my check on one of these two, it would be Shorty Torres. With that being said, we don't have to limit ourselves to just one. I thought both these guys stood out. If you were doing a three stars for a UFC, guys would have a real good case to be a part of that top three, and that's a hard place to be when you're segregated to the Fight Pass prelims. But if you look at the entire six fight prelim cards, UFC made a mistake by not putting these two fights on TV.
Yeah, I mean, we look at the TV prelims, all of them in a decision. Eubanks gets a win over Murphy. You have to imagine she would be, the next in line after Valentino Shevchenko. David Tamor gets a decision win over Nick Lentz. Bilal Muhammad, the win over, decision win over Chance Roundtree and Desmond Green. The win over Gleison Tibau. But look, when you come to this card, it was all about what Marlon Moraes did, what Gegard Gillespie did. Those were two big storylines. But the UFC train does roll on, Daniel. This Saturday, UFC 225, and, it doesn't happen all the time, but I'm in love with this fight card. I think when you look top to bottom, from the start with the fights on Fight Pass to the four fights on FS1, then of course your main card on pay-per-view, I love this fight card all the way. There's so many fights that I'm very interested to see how they play out. I will tell you, when I looked at the fight card, it was very odd to me that Rashad Coulter versus Chris De La Rocha is on FS1, and a fight like Joseph Benavidez, Sergio Pettis, Rashad Evans, Anthony Smith, Clay Guida, Charles Oliveira are on the Fight Pass prelims, but it is what it is. I guess if you're a Fight Pass subscriber, that's it's a bonus for you. Really interested. Robert Whitaker, Yoel Romero, was watching a little bit of Dan Hardy's breakdown of this fight. I still like Robert Whitaker to walk away. And then of course, the co-main event, I'll get your take on this. You think there's going to be as many people rooting against Colby Covington that will be rooting for him?
No, there's going to be way more people that are rooting against Colby Covington than for him, Jason. Are you kidding me? Who's rooting for Colby Covington other than the worst person in your friend group, Jason? This guy spoils movies. I feel like he was talking directly to me when he calls me like a nerd virgin. This guy's just a jerk. But it seems like Colby Covington is in this weird thing where he isn't to me Connor. He isn't to me Chael. He to me is a guy who is – you clearly see him trying to be the next Chael. It feels a bit disingenuous, which is crazy when I'm comparing you to Chael Sonnen and I'm saying jerks. People still hate him, but it just seems kind of manufactured, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's clearly, riding with this. And I think a guy that's probably rooting for Colby Covington to win, you got to think, is Tyron Woodley, because, Covington's going to be able to sell that fight. I mean, one of the things that, and I saw someone else kind of point this out the other day, is think about all the promotional videos that you have seen for UFC 225. And think about the part of the videos that are about RDA and Covington. Everything you see with RDA is about what he's done in the octagon. And I do kind of feel like they're not really emphasizing the fact of, RDA is looking to make history here to become a fighter to win a UFC title in two different weight classes. But when you think about the footage you see of Covington, nearly all of it is about him on a microphone as opposed to his fighting ability. So I think that should kind of tell you something.
Well, to an extent, you are right. But it's, to me, it's not so much the skill set of Colby Covington. I think he's damn great. I think it's more maybe the fight style he possesses.
Oh, it's a fighting style that doesn't necessarily get people...
15-minute wrestling session.
Yeah, it doesn't get people to sit there and go, oh, I want to be, sit there and watch a Colby Covington fight. I mean, you think about that fight he had against Damian Maia. It doesn't get people excited. But look, it's, Colby, whether you love or hate Colby, what he has done is he has used his social media and, talking trash to put himself in this situation. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago that he was losing, that he suffered his first loss against Wally Alves. And, when you look at that strength of schedule, I mean, he does have two quality wins in his last two fights against Damian Maia and Dongyeon Kim. And I think he even got to throw Brian Barberina in there. But you have to note that it's taken, three rounds, a decision to get that job done. Look, if he can keep RDA on the ground, he might win a 25-minute decision. But my pick in this fight is RDA just simply because he's a better overall fighter.
Absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong when you said RDA has an opportunity to win a championship in two weight classes. Oh, doesn't that make you feel gross, Jason? The fact that this is a championship fight.
Yeah. I mean, it's
especially history, right? It's history, and it's BS because it shouldn't be a championship fight when Tyron Woodley's probably going to fight in like 4 months.
Yeah, I forget who I heard. I don't know if it was Abraham Kawa who said this, who represents Tyron Woodley, or if it was someone else I heard say it. But they were basically like, Woodley has mentioned about fighting August 4th. Dana was on the UFC Unfiltered podcast this week. He mentioned September 8th as the return of Tyron Woodley, which you have to imagine that based on the fighting styles, Colby might be able to return quicker to compete if he is just able to get the fight to the ground and take no damage, where if you look at RDA, might need a little bit more time just kind of based on his fighting style. But, I like RDA in the fight. As I said, I just think it's just because of of his overall skill set. He has more tools in the toolbox to win this fight. And because the thing with Colby Covington is, what happens if RDA stops all of his takedowns and all of a sudden he can't get the fight to the ground? And he, you look at his striking. It's just, I mean, look, when you saw what Damian Maia was able to do to him on the feet, I mean, look, and who knows? I mean, it has been since October of last year since we've seen him. Maybe we're going to see a totally different Colby Covington. We're going to be on this podcast next week going, man, well, how about Colby Covington? But I just don't know how you really pick Colby to win this fight. That's why I like RDA.
Yeah, I also like Rafael Dos Anjos. Clearly a fighter who's much more experienced fighting at the highest level, but more than that, it is the well-rounded nature of all of his tools. Colby Covington's obviously a game dog in this fight, though. He has a clear path to victory. He has a clear, singular skill to win, and it's a skill that has worked time and again in big-money fights, that wrestling. Wrestling is a big-time equalizer when you aren't as good at stand-up, you aren't as good at grappling. It provides an opportunity for him to maybe steal 3 out of 5 rounds due to point scoring. So that's certainly a possible reality there, but it's hard for me to pick against Rafael Dos Anjos. He has the ability to defend takedowns and finish the fight both on the ground, but more likely on the feet. In fact, I don't think this one goes the distance, Jason. I think at some point, Dos Anjos does catch Covington and does finish him with strikes.
Yeah, I would. I definitely have to agree with you there.
Before we move on, and I know you mentioned it, but can we beat this horse into the ground, Jason? You mentioned it, but Joseph Benavidez, Sergio Pettis, is not on television, but it's on Fight Pass.
Come on, you know why. You know why.
Why?
It's because it's a flyweight fight.
Bro, okay, that's true. You know, then don't have a flyweight division. Because, like, oh my God, I mean, that's like the stupidest thing ever. Joseph Benavidez is theoretically an all-time great fighter. And as we talk today, the only person he's lost to in the last 100 trillion years is Demetrius Johnson. This is a guy who's going to challenge for a flyweight championship at some point in the future. And you aren't building him as a pay-per-view quality guy by stuffing him on Fight Pass. I mean, put this guy – this to me showcases the problems with the UFC if they screw this up. If they put Joseph Benavidez, Sergio Pettis on the Fight Pass – they don't know how to cross their T's or dot their I's, Jason. This is a premier fight. A premier fight. And even though it's at flyweight, you could have put this on any other fight card. But to put this on Fight Pass to me is a total, total screw-up.
No, look, I think, I would simply put that fight on FS1 as opposed to Rashad Coulter and Chris Del Rosa, which, look, I'm sure that fight's on FS1 because they think it's going to end in a knockout in the opening round. When it comes to the rest of the main card, Holly Holm versus Megan Anderson, there's a great video piece up on MMAfighting.com by EKC Leiden on Megan Anderson. Really just extremely great, UFC. Take note of what Casey did there, and you could probably learn some things on how you promote a fighter. But just a really good piece. A lot of for people who are not maybe familiar with Megan Anderson, really introduce you to her. Of course, breaking news: we actually have a non-title women's featherweight fight in the UFC. We don't see that too often. We got Andre Arlovski against Tuivasa, which. Look, if Tuivasa wins, someone's got to have a beer in a shoe for him after this fight's over. Chicago, if you don't do that, you're failing. And then, of course, we got CM Punk and Mike Jackson. Of course, we all know why CM Punk is on the pay-per-view. We've talked about that plenty of times here. In terms of my picks, in terms of those three fights, I like Holly Holm. I think that does go all 15 minutes, but I like her striking over Megan Anderson. Tyler Tuivasa, I'm going with him, and a lot of that just is probably more of going against Andre Arlovski at this point in his career. And then CM Punk, Mike Jackson. I don't even know who to pick in this one, Daniel. I'm going to go Mike Jackson, but not comfortable.
Okay, so I agree with your picks for the first two fights. It's great to see a women's featherweight fight that doesn't have a championship around it. And this is a fight I really want to see. Can you pull up the betting odds for this? Because I literally can't pull up the betting odds because I'm on school Wi-Fi. And for some reason, best fight odds is like banned by the server. But I can still log on to Campster.com or whatever that website, Campsoda.com.
So what odds are you looking for?
Punk and Jackson. I want to see that. And I also have two of us in my pick.
Mike Jackson is -230 on Five Dimes as we record this podcast here on Tuesday afternoon. CM Punk +190, and CM Punk at one point was, it looks like he was about +210 at one point.
Well, that's crazy. Not crazy, but that's crazy that this fight's happening.
We're
going to talk about it in the buy or sell segment, but CM Punk's in court right now, and I don't understand how you can be in court and, like, prepare for a fight that's on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's like I look at the betting odds for this, and I think you can make money in MMA, but I mean, I gotta imagine if you bet on MMA all the time, this has got to be a pass for you, just because, man, like, I don't know how you necessarily put money on it. Maybe you take the under 1.5 rounds +110. I mean, look, if you're the UFC, you're just hoping, Mike, that CM Punk wins. You know, it's like I look at this, you know, I look at the future and think about this. So CM Punk is +190. You want to know who's a bigger underdog on this card?
Who?
Rashad Evans against Anthony Smith.
Wow.
Rashad Evans is +270. Anthony Smith is -330.
I mean, that's another fighter that we're going to have a retirement discussion about.
Okay. Who is more likely to have a UFC fight after UFC 225? CM Punk or Rashad Evans?
Rashad Evans, 100%. I think
even
CM
if he
Punk's
loses?
Gonna, dude. Yes, because I think CM Punk's going to lose, and I don't understand how you could put him back in the cage after losing to Mike the Truth Jackson.
You want to know the last time Rashad Evans got a win?
Is it 2004? What year was it?
November 16th, 2013, UFC 167 defeated Chelsea in the co-main event of that fight card, which was headlined by George St. Pierre scoring his split decision win over Johnny Hendricks.
That's insane. And dude, we kind of undersell how long ago, like, 2013 is. It was literally 5 years ago. And I'm not saying it's likely that Rashad Evans fights again, Jason. I'm just saying it's much more likely than CM Punk fighting again, because I really do think two things are going to happen here. I think CM Punk's going to lose to Mike Jackson, which, again, it doesn't get much worse when it comes to opponent quality than Mike the Truth Jackson. Two, I think CM Punk's going to return back to the professional wrestling business. That's the second thing I think is going to happen. Maybe not the WWE, but I do think independent wrestling. I do think Japanese wrestling for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, that's one of those fights. I mean, as we've talked about countless times on this podcast, we know why this fight's on the pay-per-view. And as someone who is in the, you know, sports bar marketing business, there is a reason why it is on the pay-per-view, because that's, you know, I can tell you this flat out, that part of my marketing strategy is based on people coming out to watch CM Punk. In terms of the rest of this card, Overeem Blades is definitely a fight that has me interested. In terms of Alistair Overeem in this matchup, I think the question I have is what happens if he keeps the fight on the feet, and then Curtis Blaydes has to have a striking matchup against Alistair Overeem. That, to me, is a little bit of the question mark there. Claudia Gadelha against Carlos Esparza. Of course, that's a big matchup there at 115 pounds. Ricardo Lamas, Mirsad Bektik. You talk about under-the-radar fights in terms of Saturday's UFC card. Ricardo Lamas versus Mirsad Bektik has got to be up there. I love the Benavidez and Sergio Pettis matchup. Sign me up for Charles Oliveira, Clay Guida. I mean, as I said, I just look at, you know, it doesn't happen a lot of times for me where I'm like, man, I can't wait for Saturday to get here. And I guess since I did my fight pass expired a couple days ago, I guess I got to renew my subscription so I can watch these four fights on Fight Pass.
I'll give you a private illegal place to watch it, Jason. Just DM me after and we'll do it, because you don't deserve to give them any money, Jason. I'm joking. I'm not actually advocating that. With that being said, the fact that they're going to make me subscribe to Fight Pass for this, which I will, after seeing that they're going to go and leave me like a lover to ESPN, it really, really, really grinds my gears, Jason. Pettis Benavidez is the clear under-the-radar fight. You mentioned number two. Lamas Bektik is such a great featherweight contest. Two of the most talented guys in the featherweight division. Carlos Esparza, Claudia Gadelha is the other matchup I'm really, really looking forward to on these prelims. Overeem Blaydes is a fight that's really kind of, I feel like, isn't a discussion point other than the fact that it's not on the main card, but big-time opportunity for Curtis Blaydes. He could be one of the major talking points after UFC 225. This is a guy that's clearly in contention for a heavyweight title shot, but he's got to go through a tough fighter in Alistair Overeem. And, I mean, this is a juicy card, Jason, and it doesn't get better than this main event between Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love that matchup between Whittaker and Yoel Romero.
Who do you have in that fight if you had a pick?
I'm going Robert Whittaker. I was going back and watching their first fight the other day, and, you know, I think the thing that really, I mean, yes, Romero was credited with, I believe it was 4 takedowns in that fight, but even with the bad knee that Whittaker had, he really did a good job, and you really saw after that second round where clearly Romero, was starting to kind of have some of those gas tank issues. So I like Robert Whittaker in this matchup, but, you know, it's kind of a coin flip fight in my mind.
Yeah, it really is. It's a fight that could play out several different ways. I could certainly see Yoel Romero have a dynamite highlight reel performance early on if he connects with Whittaker. That's just kind of the type of fighter he is. He fights like an absolute freight train. But like you, and we really are agreeing on these picks here, I think Robert Whittaker has the technique down. He has the ability to survive maybe the early onslaught from Romero. And as this fight progresses, I mean, I think it's pretty easy to see him winning the last 3 rounds for sure. There is some concern with his ability to recover after the long layoff and dealing with what he dealt with. But I do think Robert Whittaker retains his middleweight championship.
Yeah, really looking forward to that fight and everything that's going to be taking place on Saturday night for UFC 225. Of course, we've got the interviews coming up here on the MMA Report podcast, but I do want to let you know that this episode of the MMA Report podcast is brought to you by Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com. They are bringing you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work.
You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, Blue Chew is prescribed online, and it ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and Jason, best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy.
And for being an MMA Report podcast listener, we have a special deal for our listeners today. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use a special promo code MMA Report. Just pay $5 shipping. Yeah, that's right. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, and use the promo code MMA Report to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the MMA Report podcast. And of course, it is that time for the interview portion of this week's show. First, you're going to hear from the Ring of Combat featherweight champion, Bill Algeo. He is going to be defending his title on Friday night against James Gonzalez. I had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about his fight and some various other things going on with him. Plus, then you're going to hear my conversation with Julius Inglesias. Of course, I had a chance to talk to Julius a couple years ago. It's been since the end of 2016 since he's had an MMA matchup. He is coming off a pro boxing, his pro boxing debut, got a win back at the end of March, and he's going to be fighting Eric Murray on Friday at LFA 42. So here are my conversations. First, you'll hear with Bill, and the second one is with Julius. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that we've had on the program before. He's got a fight coming up this week. Bill, man, I appreciate the time. It's fight week. So what is this week like for you?
This week's all about just making that weight. That's it. That's just diet, eating just leans and lean proteins and greens. That's it. So leans and greens, and then breaking a sweat, once, maybe twice a day, just focus on, you know, what I'm going to do in the fight. So I'm focusing on my go-tos, essentially.
Of course, this is Ring of Combat 63. You know, obviously, a big topic in MMA is the early weigh-ins. Are they doing the earlier weigh-ins for this one?
No, they're not. It's going to be at 8 o'clock at night on Thursday. So I would like it a little bit earlier. That'd be nice. But no, it's going to be 8 o'clock on Thursday, but I'm probably not going to be fighting until like 10 o'clock Friday. So I'll have plenty of time to recover.
And just from a fighter's perspective, you know, I know you're also a coach as well. I mean, what's your general thoughts on kind of that topic of, I think from the regulatory side, they say, hey, gives you more time to rehydrate. From your view, do you think maybe there needs to be a compromise between maybe it's not at 9 a.m. local time, maybe it's something like noon?
Ultimately, I'm just not a big fan of weight cutting in general. I think what they should do is they're starting to do this a little bit with amateurs with the testing of their actual body weight with 5% body fat or something. They can't go any lower. I think what you need to do is test the guys and they have to weigh in hydrated or weigh them 10 minutes before they get in, you know, and then just make it different weight classes. They handle it well in high school wrestling with the hydration tests and stuff like that, too. I think it would be the best thing for professional fighters, too. I mean, I don't mind cutting the weight, but I know it's just terrible for my body, and it's not something I look forward to, that's for sure.
Of course, you were supposed to fight back in March. That did not happen. Your opponent gets an illness. Frustration? Illness. Is frustration the right way to describe just that time frame?
Frustration is one of the words I would use, one of many words I would use. there's nothing I could physically do about it. It sucks doing all that work, putting everything together. It's not easy making that weight. It's not easy being selfish for, you know, the 6 weeks leading up to it on my girlfriend, on my teammates, on my students. You know, I could have been a lot more productive in other areas of my life, but I chose to be selfish, take a fight, try to progress up the ranking system and add to my highlight reel. And I do all the right things and I'm there and he's there. And 10 minutes beforehand, I find out he doesn't want to do it. So yeah, it sucks.
Who is a poor person that had to tell you the fight was off?
That would be, Mr. Perez, Frankie Perez Sr. I know he started speaking Spanish to Will Martinez. I knew something wasn't right. I understand very little Spanish, but I knew just by the tone and him shaking his head that something was wrong. You know, I didn't think it was the fight's off, but I knew it wasn't good. And sure enough, I saw Will's reaction to what he said, and I knew it right there. I mean, I felt that same feeling before. I've had that happen before a couple times, and I knew, I just couldn't believe it happened that close to the fight because I had just seen Tevin Shook an hour before that, you know, at the doctor's meeting, and everything was cool. Everything was fine. He was perfectly healthy. So, yeah.
It seems like you hear more about that in the amateur, you know, side of the equation, not necessarily always in the pro. Yeah. I mean,
you would think, huh?
is that one of those things of kind of a meal you get over, or does it linger for some time of like, man, I've invested so much of the last 6-8 weeks of my life to this, and how do you get over that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it sucks, but again, all these fights, the moments are fleeting. Whether you win or lose, you probably remember the losses a lot more than you do the wins. But regardless, the win, the loss, the no fight, those feelings, those moments are fleeting. It's all about, in this game, let's get to that next one. Let's win that next one. That's what you'll have to be looking forward to, the next fight and getting better and looking forward to win. If you're looking back too much, you're going to get pissed up.
You mentioned about the rankings, and I saw on your Twitter account you had retweeted this prospect list that was out there from April. When you see your number 18, what goes through your mind?
That means I got 17 guys in front of me that need to get their butt whooped, essentially. I haven't really looked too much in that list. Yeah, I think I retweeted, or my manager retweeted, or whatever. But I don't really care about, you know, some rankings. That literally means nothing. The same as the UFC rankings. They're all over the place. Who knows what they're basing it on? Obviously, record's a big part of that, but it's also who you fought. And I fight tough guys, You know, I guarantee a lot of those guys above me haven't had as many tough fights as me.
And anyone can look at your record, they'll see Jared Good and Shane Burgos' losses. You mentioned about those are kind of the things that haunt you. Is one of those two fights haunt you more than the other?
Well, there's those two, and then there's another loss, too, that, you know, I was winning the fight and did some stupid stuff and got armbarred. That was my second professional loss. So, I mean, I constantly look back and like, man, if I won that, I'd be here. But it's just a waste of energy and time. It's hard not to. More so, I look at the Gordon and the Burgos losses as, okay, what did I do wrong here? The other one, that was more of a mental mistake on my part, but those two guys are killing it right now in the UFC. Those two, I can look back and say, okay, what do I need to improve on? And that's going to help my game tremendously.
How much of this game is mental over physical?
Well, you'll always get different answers from different guys. Obviously, it's a physical contest. You can't be, you know, a sloppy Joe and go in there and hope to do good no matter how great your technique is. But yeah, it's mental, it's physical. I mean, everybody at this level is a good athlete, though. And what does separate a lot of guys at the highest level is the mental game.
Now, your opponent here, James Gonzalez, what's your thoughts on him just as an overall opponent?
I like that fight for me. Once I heard his name and I found out I'd be fighting him next, I was happy. I think stylistically, he doesn't really pose too many threats to me. I know he's a good jiu-jitsu guy. I know I can't just, you know, slip up like I did in my first loss and make a mental mistake on my part. he can catch me with something if it goes to the ground. So don't let it go to the ground. Simple.
You know, in terms of the preparations for this fight as opposed to when you're supposed to fight Tevin earlier this year, did you make any changes inside your training camp to tailor to this fight as opposed to the previous fight?
Not too much. I saw Tevin. I mean, big thing is Tevin would have been orthodox, whereas James Gonzalez, he might be orthodox, but his last fight, he fought entirely southpaw. So I'm ready for whatever stance he wants to come out in. It will not matter. I can fight out of both stances. I've fought entire fights, southpaw and orthodox. So it doesn't matter to me. But it's really up to him what he wants to do, and I'll adjust.
You know, I understand there's pressure in every fight, but where you look at you're at this point in your career, I mean, have you maybe put pressure onto yourself of knowing, like, look, if I'm going to get recognized by the bigger promotions, I got to do something special?
A little bit. There's always a little bit of that. I mean, like you said, there is pressure on every single fight. I am trying to add to my highlight reel. But again, the most important thing is that you win. The worst thing you do is go out there looking for some highlight type of flying whatever and end up getting your back taken or getting taken down, and then you're losing all that energy because you got taken down doing something stupid. So first and foremost, we're looking to win. Second is looking to look good.
It's something that you said there talking about, you know, hey, the goal is winning. I'm thinking about this past weekend's UFC. Jared Brooks is winning against Shorty Torres, tries to slam him and then knocks himself out and he loses the fight. He just kind of shows one minor mistake and man, your night's over. I mean, and it can completely ruin everything else you've done the entire fight.
Exactly. And that could have been the difference between, well, one, probably an extra 15, 20 grand for him. But then, you know, who knows how his next fight goes, you know, so, and how he's feeling after getting knocked out from himself. Mentally, that does a lot to you. Plus, you know, your brain's not meant to take too many of those.
Yeah, it's you feel unfortunate for him, but that is the fight game. You know, mentioned this is the first fight since November. Have you mapped out what you want this year to be for you?
I'm just looking to stay busy. You know, I plan fights ahead of time, and I make sure my schedule's clear. I got nothing in the way, and I try to have my fights set up where I do have a little bit of free time, where I have time for my guys to take on fights because they're constantly taking fights. So I do need to spend time getting them ready, getting them prepared, as well as, you know, just normal day-to-day stuff as well, like weddings, stuff like that, family stuff. So when I find out, okay, there's a fight this month or this month, I pick the best month, and then I go full steam ahead from there.
And, of course, this fight is coming up on Friday night, Ring of Combat 63. Bill, as always, man, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
I think I am El Senior Perfecto on basically everything, on Twitter and Instagram. And then Facebook is Bill Algeo. But you can also follow Algeo MMA on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's going to be part of LFA 42 coming Friday night live on Access TV. A man we've had on the program before, Julius, man. As always, man, I appreciate the time. It's been some time since we've seen you in mixed martial arts competition. You had a pro boxing fight back in March. So it's been, I guess, a little bit of a crazy, couple of years for you. Last MMA fight ended 2016. I mean, so what's been going on?
Oh, man, like after my last MMA fight, I had to fight in May. My meniscus blew out, had to back out from the fight, had another one scheduled in July, hurt my rib, had to back out. And then for the longest time, just had a trouble looking for, like, finding fights. And whenever the boxing fight came up, even though it was 1 week notice, I knew I had to take it just to, like, see where I'm at, if I had any ring rust on me. And the fight worked out perfect. I realized that, like, even though I did not fight for a long time, I still realized that I improved a lot. And, I definitely know, like, I'm going to be fighting differently in this one than in my last MMA fight, too.
Mentioning about the long layoff, was timing something that you had to kind of work through in the opening moments of that boxing matchup to just kind of get back into the flow?
Yeah, the timing, it was just like, I need to take it, because if I don't take it, then who knows when the next thing is coming. Because, I mean, who wants to put a guy on the show who hasn't fought for a long time? So now I feel like this time, okay, he fought a box, even though it was a boxing fight, he looked good, he did great. All right, so he still got it. So I'm sure, we're sure he can do good in MMA too. So I did not have a lot of ring rust, but at the same time, yes, the more you fight, the more comfortable you get with it. So I had to, like, pretty much fight in at the gym sometimes to understand that, like, I still have it in me.
Of course, at gym, St. Charles MMA, which I think a lot of MMA fans around the country are very aware of that gym based on some of the fires that have come out of that gym. As you have, this matchup, a huge opportunity for you. How do you, with this being your first MMA fight since 2016, I mean, do you kind of feel like, this is going to be a new version of yourself, because it was such a long time ago that guy that fought the end of 2016 is nowhere near what you are now?
Yeah, I'm definitely completely different. Plus my last fight, I fought a little differently just because I was, like, coming from the loss. So I feel I was a bit more cautious. Like, my loss was still in my head, so it was messing with me a little bit. But, I feel it's going to be day and night difference from how I performed last time and how much I grew. Even though I haven't fought, I still feel like I grew so much. I wish I would have fought, then it would have, like, tested and actually seen in the real competition. But even besides that, I know, like, I grew a lot over the period of time.
You mentioned about the last fight was coming off a loss, the mental side of it. I mean, is it something that, how do you kind of make sure that never kind of creeps back into your mentality when you're in there on fight night?
It's a lot of mental, it's a big mental game. Like, you never know if, like, ever, like, right before the fight, I'm dealing with, like, many different thoughts. It's, okay, like, do I really want to fight? Do I really want to do this? I'm about to have a panic attack. I'm about to fight. And every 2 seconds, it, like, flips from, okay, I got this, I'm the best in the world, I can beat anyone. And then, like, the next second it flips, I want to run away from here. So, like, goes back and forth, and, like, everybody deals with that. And it's tough, and I haven't mastered it. And I don't think anyone has mastered it. So it's just, I feel like it's, like, part of the fight game to battle with that before you're actually going to go and battle.
Nerves, I guess, is a kind of a way to kind of describe that. when they, you know, when you walk into the cage or walk into the ring, is that the moment when the nerves just kind of go away? You're like, okay, it's just me and the other guy, the referee. This is what I was meant to do.
Yeah, so like this, every time, the second you walk in, it's like nerves are gone. But then the reality hits you. It's like, okay, it's about to go down. So like nerves are gone because now it's like there is no time to worry about it. Now it's time to perform. And there is no time to like think, oh, how it's going to be. What if this, what if that? No, because this is happening right now. So there's no time to think about the future because the future is now. Fight is now. So what happens, happens. So once you fight, it's much, much better.
In terms of this matchup, coming up here at LFA 42, Eric Murray, the opponent, you know, the cliche you always hear is why you like this fight for yourself. So why do you like this matchup?
I feel it's going to be a good test for me. I mean, he's a tough guy. And so, I mean, I do need to be tested. He's tough. He's known. He's 3-0. He just fought a tough guy. He beat him in the second round, I believe. And not too many people wanted to fight him, and he just kind of shut him down. And so I feel, I don't know, I feel like our styles are somewhat similar. Our heights are similar. So I feel it's just going to be a good, good fight for people to watch. And I feel I could look good in it. So I feel I might be able to like show off my skills. And he's a tough guy because like, and it's no more of the, how to say it, I can't be fighting easy people anymore because that's not going to give me too much exposure. So I feel it's just like I'm at that time where it's like, okay, I need to fight tougher people. And when you fight tougher people, you might lose some, you might win some, but there is no choice. You just have to do it. This is a part of the game. Now you're fighting tough, tough guys. All the amateur side is behind you, and now you're in a like tank full of sharks, and you just have to make sure you are one of them and fighting your way through it.
You know, when you put that film in the first time at watching Eric, was there something you're like, oh my, this guy's got a killer right hand, left hand, whatever it may be? Was there something that really stuck out to you?
I saw how he was like in a way calm and like sharp when he kept getting taken down by what's his name, Will Johnson, I believe his last fight. He like kept taken down, but he like kept getting up, and I'm like, I was like, wow, like all right. He like stayed with his composure. So like first round, I believe he lost because of all the takedowns, but like he just knew that the guy's gonna gas out. So the way he just like took the fight, he just knew there was time. He stayed smart. He like did not get wild at all. I remember in the second round, he pretty much let his opponent punch at him, and he like just took it and blocked them all. And I was like, okay, like he's smart. He's not going to go too crazy. So I know I have to stay on my A game, because the second I'm going to go off my A game, he's going to watch it and he's gonna try to capitalize on it. So he's a smart dude, and I just need to be smarter.
You know, we always hear about fighters having a high IQ or being a smart fighter. What would your definition of a fighter having a high IQ or being a smart fighter be?
I think it's like, yeah, all those things is just being in your A game, because it's very, very easy to just to fade away, because the first minute or so, you're all sharp, you're all prepared for anything happening. But later on in the fight, like your distance starts growing up. Maybe timing is weird. Technique is starting to go out of the window. Hands are starting to drop. You're starting to get a little too wild. So I feel like having that IQ is understanding like that later on, you still need to stay calm, stick to the specific rules, which is chin down, hands up, straight punches. Don't go wild, gas yourself out. It's always having like yourself under control. Everyone does like right away, but later on it just goes out of the window. So just remaining throughout the whole fight with like exactly what you know, is I feel like that's what IQ is.
Of course, it's fight week. So what is this week like for you?
Oh, man, like this past few weeks been just busy. Been trying to get a new car, just got a new car right now. So I have been like dealing with the returning old one, getting new one. I have to like shoot a little video tomorrow. Yeah, I have an interview with you today. I have to cut weight. So it's a lot of little things that life just threw at me. So like recently I just moved to this apartment. So I had a lot on my mind. Car, new apartment, job, fight. Like, I don't want to deal with all of the things. I just want to think about my fight and training. So it was, I feel, it was a bit of a challenge to deal with all other things while also keeping sharp with training and having fight on my mind while getting all other things done too. So it's just been crazy, but maybe it's good. Maybe like it keeps my mind away from fighting a little bit and I'm not freaking out as much. So, but it's different because usually it's just like fight. Oh, that's all I'm thinking. And maybe that used to like stress me out a little bit more.
But it all goes down on Friday night. We look forward to seeing your matchup. Where can everyone follow you out on social media?
Facebook, Instagram. I'm bigger on Instagram than Twitter. Snapchat is just simply my name, Julius Anglickas. For the Snapchat, it's Yulux215. Instead of S, it's an X. That's like Lithuanian thing. So Yulux215. And yeah, Instagram, Julius Anglickas, or friend me on Facebook. And yeah, watch me there.
And there you have my conversations with Bill Algeo and Julius Anglickas. And of course, I did record both those interviews in video form, so those will be up on the MMA Report YouTube channel as well. But Daniel, it is time for our weekly buy and sell segment where we have five MMA topics that we either buying or are we selling on. And when we were talking about UFC 225, you had alluded to the very first topic we're going to mention here in the buy sell segment, and that has to do with CM Punk. And the simple question is, CM Punk being in a trial isn't the greatest fight camp, and I don't know how you have to buy this one, right? I mean, I don't see how you don't sell it, because you have to imagine with all the testimony, I believe they're going on day six now as we're recording this show, that it's got to be on his mind, and it has to have some type of effect on him.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a buy. Like, anyone that is selling this must be Judge Judy or something, because this is one of the worst fight camps I've ever seen. Not only is it weighing on your mind the fact that he's in this court case, and the Spartan Notes version of the court case is after he quit the WWE, he went on a podcast and he talked about how maybe about the medical side of maybe there was negligence by the WWE. And then I believe either the WWE or a specific doctor maybe is suing CM Punk because maybe what he said wasn't accurate. So that's my Spartan Notes, heard it from another guy version of this whole story. Moral of the story is he fights on Saturday, and he's been in the courtroom each and every morning the last six or so days, man. Even if we're not talking about the mental aspect of, you know, being in court, the time it takes to be spent in court and not in the gym, Jason, this is going to be a nightmare for his weight cut. But more importantly, the final days of a fight camp have been completely ruined, and it's really insane that he's been in court and he's fighting on Saturday.
Yeah,
so I'm buying this.
Yeah, as you said, I think you laid out there perfectly. I don't know how you have to buy this one. Number two is really probably, you know, maybe the biggest topic in MMA over the past couple of days, and that has to do with UFC fighter Andrea Lee. Of course, I'm sure by now everyone has seen the picture of her and her husband that was taken over the weekend. And, you know, the question is going to be, Andrea Lee's husband's tattoos are ruining her career. Now, before we get into whether we're buying or selling this, do want to mention that she was on the Slip and Dip podcast on Monday, where she was asked about this situation, and this was her comments. Quote, I took a picture with my husband, and he has some embarrassing tattoos. He has a swastika on his arm. He's normally careful about posting pictures, but he posted our lake pictures on Twitter, and people zoomed in on his tattoos and saw his swastika, and they started commenting and posting hateful stuff. He saw it immediately, and he was upset, and I saw it, and everybody was turning on me because he's my husband, and I'm standing next to him, so obviously I must be a racist and a Nazi. When I met Donnie, I asked him about the tattoos because I was curious, as well as he told me his story, and he was talking about how he changed. I even asked him why he wouldn't cover them up. I felt the same way. Maybe you should cover them up, but he says it looks terrible already and it would just make it worse. I don't know. I can't make him do it. I can't make him throw something on there. I swear to y'all that neither one of us are racist. We just had a bad pass. He just had a bad pass, obviously. He got it on his arm. He didn't mean to put it out there for everyone to see, and certainly doesn't want to ruin my career. Now, she would go on to further say that her and her husband are discussing options for doing something about the tattoos, which, by the way, this is after she ended up sending a tweet calling people sensitive-ass mofos, which she took that tweet down. She has issued an apology for that response, and she goes on to say, quote, actually, him and I just had the talk earlier. We're discussing it, trying to find someone who could cover it up and maybe make it look good, make it not look trashier than it already is. We're going to talk about it and see what happens. Those quotes come from the Slip and Dip podcast. And simply the question is, buy, sell. Andrea's husband's tattoos are ruining her career, and I am buying this.
I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to sell it because I don't want to be on the other side of a swastika tattoo debate, Jason. Like, that is definitely not the place I want to be. But I will say, this is the most 2018 story we've had so far. I mean, it involves, like, Nazis, which super 2018. It involves social media outrage, which is justified once again. A swastika, I just think there aren't that many symbols, I think, as a society, we have all agreed on, are really bad and maybe you shouldn't get it tattooed. I think it's fair that the swastika is a part of that deal. But once again, why is it very much like 2018? We have a picture, we have social media outrage, we have a wrong initial reaction by the culprits in Andrea Lee and her husband, and then we have an adjustment, and then here's why I'm selling. And then we're all going to forget about this and move on, because that's just how we consume stuff. So I'm selling this in that it won't ruin her career. It's going to hurt it for a while, maybe a few weeks. But we do live in this culture. We're going to constantly forget. I think he's going to change his tattoo. But oh my gosh, some of the excuses she has made for him and that he has made himself, the fact that it's going to look ugly. Bro, nothing's uglier than a Nazi symbol. Like, that's a Nazi symbol. That's the ugliest it can get. And it's not necessarily about the aesthetics of that tattoo. No one cares about it. It's the meaning behind it. Regardless if you're a part of some type of absurd gang, and a swastika is a swastika. And it just seems like he got caught and he's reacting more to the reaction of others and not so much the content of his character.
It's a black eye for the UFC and also for Andrea Lee. I think the question for her and her husband, if this, and look, I don't know Andrea personally. I don't know her husband either. So we are very much outside looking in on this. The question I think to Andrea would be is, if this was a picture you saw online of someone you did not know, or maybe another UFC fighter, what would your thought process be and how different would it be than what you're thinking right now? You know, it's an awful look for her. And, you know, I remember, I think it was Friday or Saturday when this came out, and, right when I saw it, I said, oh, this is going to become a big story. And it certainly has. Number three, after his recent comments about Bellator and being KO'd last weekend, we have seen the last of Alexander Shelmenko in Bellator.
I think that's a tough one. because last is very permanent. So I'm going to sell it, Jason. But I don't think his next fight will be in Bellator, if that makes any sense. I think this is a guy in Shlemenko who has a big asking price when it comes to getting him back inside the Bellator cage. I think he loves fighting an M1 challenge. He's fighting Bellator opponents like Paul Bradley and Brandon Halsey inside M1 cage, inside Russia. But I'm going to sell on the word never, Jason, because I think at some point in time he'll return back to the Bellator cage despite the knockout loss to Bruno Silva on June the 1st. I think he's going to get a victory again, provide some value. And in a weight class that he fights at 185 that really does not have much depth at all, Alexander Shlemenko does have some value. So I think at some point they're going to meet in the middle and he'll return back to the Bellator cage.
The reason I am selling this is what you said there at the end, the lack of depth at 185 in Bellator. They need him, but definitely it's not going to help him in any negotiations, whether, you know, when it comes to a bout agreement. Number four, we're going to stick with Bellator here. And concerning Michael Page, Bellator allowing Michael Page to have a boxing match is a bad business decision by Bellator. And I'm going to buy this, Daniel, because the last thing you want is Michael Page losing in a combat sports fight outside of the Bellator cage.
100% agree with you. I'm buying this as well. This is like if UFC allowed Conor McGregor to take on Floyd Mayweather, but no one cared about the McGregor-Mayweather fight. There isn't money coming in Bellator's way. No one's psyched about Michael Page's boxing match. I don't even know who he's fighting. So there's certainly risk. It's a bad business decision. It's not the worst thing in the world because in all likelihood, I'm assuming he's going to take on a can and he's going to win. There would be much more risk maybe if Michael Page was going to go out there in a sport like bare knuckle boxing, which we saw get a lot of play over the weekend. And I just think it's a minor risk, but a minor risk is still a bad business decision. So I'm buying. This is a bad business decision by Bellator to allow Michael Page to box.
Yeah. Final thing, and we're about to talk about PFL with their inaugural event coming up on Thursday night of this week. And our final buy-sell topic is on the PFL. Of course, the show on Thursday going to feature featherweights and heavyweights. And it has to do about the featherweight tournament. Andre Harrison is the favorite to win the featherweight tournament in season one of PFL. Some notable names to mention that are in the featherweight, along with Andre Harrison, Alejandro Almeida, Marcus Galvo, Nazrina Malagari, Lance Palmer, Steven Seiler, Timur Valiyev. I'm going to sell it. I think the favorite still got to be Lance Palmer, even though Andre Harrison is a tremendous fighter, undefeated. I'm still going to say Lance Palmer to me is a favorite. Yes, they have had a fight already in the World Series of Fighting. Of course, that was a decision win for Andre Harrison, but I'm going to still say Lance Palmer is my favorite, so that's why I'm selling this.
Yeah, and I think he has the skill set to win this tournament when you compare it to maybe what Andre Harrison brings. It's just, I think Andre Harrison is clearly one of the top favorites, but like you, I'm selling this as well, and I'm actually going to differ with you, man. By the way, I really love this featherweight tournament. We're going to talk about this card. But to me, my favorite is actually Nazrina Malagari. He is my pick to win this tournament. I just think he's really underrated. I think he's at a high, high skill level. Obviously, he has his work cut out for him going up against a very tough opponent, Marcus Gaval, who's going to give up a lot in size. But, Jason, even though Malagari may not have the wrestling of a Harrison or a Lance Palmer, I think we're looking at his other skill sets, his evolution, and kind of where he is as a fighter. I think he's in his prime. And Nazrina Malagari is actually my pick to win this whole thing.
And for those who don't know, Malagari 5-0 since having that one official fight in the UFC back at UFC 191, which was a split decision loss against Joaquim Silva. Of course, coming off a win in Pancrase. Now, when I, you know, first up, when it comes to this PFL event, Thursday night, I'm going to be watching live. You know, and it's more of a, you know, overall a very good fight card. Top to bottom, a lot of known names on this fight card. Interested to kind of see with this business model that they are taking, the quote-unquote no local prelim fights, does that get people a little more excited? Of course, I do kind of question the fact of just financially how do they make this thing work, but it's more of a fascination with the PFL to kind of see what's it look like. you know, our fans excited. So I'll ask you, I know sometimes at night you're doing some TV production stuff. So are you going to watch this thing live, or is it going to be via DVR?
Jason, to be completely honest with you, we're talking about a Thursday night fight card, and I am all in. I'm a man who works Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, so usually I'm going to be watching UFC or Bellator on DVR, but this summer, man, if PFL delivers, I'm probably going to be watching more PFL cards live than UFC just because of the day placement, and I'm real excited for this fight card, man. There isn't a whole lot – there isn't one single fight that's drawing me to this event. But I'm looking forward to the grand total of the featherweight and heavyweight matchups. I think moving forward, maybe the semifinal, final matchups are going to be great. Whichever guys accumulate the most amount of points. And I'm just really looking forward to this fight card. I may not watch the entire thing live because it is a big ask. But between Thursday and Friday, I will consume most of it, including the main card. But yeah, man, I'll be on my sofa consuming the fights, consuming some buffalo wings, some cheese curds, maybe even some blue chew.
The two fights that jump out to me, the two fights that interest me the most, Galvo, Malagari, and also Magomedov and Palmer. Magomedov, people may remember, was actually the last bantamweight champion for the WSOF, got that win against Donovan Freelo last year. Now, this is his first fight since March of last year. Those are really the two fights that stick out there. And, you know, look, and, you know, I hope the PFL succeeds. I really do, but there's a lot of things you look at them and say, you know, can they do it? But I would say for myself, I'm fascinated to see what it ultimately looks like. I watched Ray Sefo and Carlos Silva on Ariel's show on Monday. I'm fascinated to see how it plays out, and I think probably more than anything else is this something that fans are more interested in than they were with the World Series of Fighting, or is it going to be the same type of excitement level as it was with the WSOF?
Well, I think people are always interested in new product, and whenever there's a debut, like maybe we saw with Bare Knuckle Fighting or with Cam Soda or with the World Series of Fighting back in the day, there's always that initial excitement. So the trick is sustaining that. I don't know if the PFL will do it. I will say, one fight card in, I'm pretty impressed. I mean, yes, those two fights are really great, Jason, from a competitive standpoint. I mean, this whole featherweight deal is great. The main event of Andre Harrison and Jiren Bektirsin is also a matchup I'm looking forward to. Looking at the heavyweight side of things, if there's one fight I'll point to, I mean, there is a lot of guys with a history of being boring, like, you know, Jared Rochalt is not necessarily a fight of the night contender, but one heavyweight matchup I'll point towards is Sean Jordan versus Philippe Lienz is a matchup that could be really entertaining. And it's been a while since I've seen Sean Jordan compete since his UFC days. So that's the fight I'll mention. If you're looking forward to a heavyweight contest, that's the one he'll be in. So I'm not super excited about the long-term future of PFL, but we're living for today. And this week I'll be watching PFL 1, Jason.
Now, the final thing we're going to talk about here on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast is an article that appeared on MMAJunkie.com back on June the 4th, which was an article written by Mike Baum about early weigh-in stats. And obviously this has become a big talking point, really since this article did came up, and Mike had a lot of great stats in this article, noted that in the 2-year period of the early weigh-in, 62 fighters have missed weight. The lightweight division has seen the most fighters miss weight with 7. Featherweight and women's strawweight are the second most with 6. He notes that the average weigh-in miss was 2.9 pounds. Charles Oliveira has had the biggest weigh-in miss, coming in 9 pounds over the featherweight limit at UFC Fight Night 98. At the end of the article, Mike writes, MMA is still a growing and evolving sport with many problems, few of which have an easy fix. The numbers prove the early weigh-in system has not made it easier on fighters to hit their contracted limits, and unless there's another radical change on the horizon, it's a topic that won't go away anytime soon. This is my initial thoughts on it. You know, you can't just sit there and go, well, it's the early weigh-ins of that's why we're having so many fighters miss weight. Now, are there probably, certain percentage of the situation where the early weigh-ins play into it? Yes. But I'll bring up two recent examples. Do you think the early weigh-ins played into Darren Till missing weight? No. If the weigh-ins were at 4 o'clock as opposed to 9 a.m., he still would have missed weight. Mackenzie Dern. Same situation. It wouldn't have mattered if the weigh-ins were 5 hours later. She was still going to miss weight. And there's been a lot of tweets about this. There was a tweet on Tuesday, and I totally agree with this tweet from John Morgan of MMA Junkie, where he tweeted, "Maybe in the minority, but I think dumping early weigh-ins would be an awful idea and not a decision made with fighter safety as a primary concern. Look forward to hearing what new ideas are in play. Old way with fighters dehydrated for hours during transport to arena, etc. Can't be the answer." And I love what he said there in that first part of his tweet, where he said, "This is not a decision made with fighter safety as a primary concern." Of course, Dana White was on the UFC Unfiltered podcast, where he basically noted that they wanted to go away from these early weigh-ins. Where he said, and this was his quotes, "Yes, I do think the early weigh-ins, and guess what? We're getting rid of them. We're looking at taking the weigh-ins back to the way they used to be so that when the fighters weigh in there at the ceremonial weigh-ins, that will be it. That will be the real weigh-in." My problem with that is Dana White, it seems like he wants to be the guy promoting the event, but also making the rules of how the event's going to go with the weigh-ins. And here's my solution to all this. How about Dana White, UFC fighters, Bellator fighters, Scott Coker show up to Orlando the end of July? How about there be a discussion between Dana, Scott, fighters, and all of the commission representatives on what the answer is?
I agree with you in that there needs to be communication from the fighters to the promoters to figure this thing out. There really does. But I just don't think that's possible. I mean, Dana White is the type of guy who talks a big game, and more often than not, he does create kind of an unfair world where he has a man, there's a bird talking, and I just, Bird, I don't want to hear your opinion. But he is a guy who really reminds me of like a hardcore dictator. And it seems like he kind of puts his foot in his own mouth. So I don't think those discussions are going to happen, Jason. But one thing I want to point out is that this is a two-pronged deal. If fighter safety is important, it's obviously one of the goals here. And I saw you like the John McCarthy had a tweet out, right? He had one of those John McCarthy woke tweets where he's like providing a new perspective, right? Like, well, what did John McCarthy say?
I have to pull it up. I will tell you this. While I look that tweet up, I'll give you another tweet. This was from Ramsey Ninjam, who was responding to John Morgan, where he said, "Weigh in and pass a hydration test simultaneously. Wrestling has made big changes in youth programs, measuring athletes in the off season and getting a true natural weight and setting that at the lowest allowed." I mean, I think one of the things that you just can't sit there and go, "Oh, it's the early weigh-ins." It's got to be a case-by-case basis. If a fighter misses weight by 4 or 5 pounds, most likely they're not going to make weight if it's at 4 o'clock. In terms of some of the tweets from John McCarthy, which he was responding to this article on MMA Junkie, where he said, "It's a huge mistake. Why is it would you change things for a small minority of fighters not doing things right, pushing the envelope of what their bodies can lose and penalizing all the fighters who do it correctly? Does this make sense to you?" I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, it's got to be about fighter safety. And I think ultimately the question to Dana White would be is, why do you feel that, you know, why do you feel it has to be at 4 o'clock? And that's why, and I can tell you, I had a conversation with the executive director about this. I said, what if a compromise was at noon as opposed to 9 a.m.? You know, put it, give them a little more time. But it's not like a fighter is showing up to UFC 225 this week and Thursday night they get a knock on the door and go, "Hey, fellas, we're having weigh-ins at 9 a.m., not 4 p.m. Like, they've known this for 2 years. So I just think that blaming the early weigh-ins is nothing more than an excuse. And we have to change the culture in the sport. And we've talked about this many times on this podcast. I think, unfortunately, for the UFC to kind of understand the issues here, it's going to take a tragedy. And I hope it never gets to that. But I feel like when I see these comments from Dana White, I feel like that's what it's going to take for us to kind of maybe see these changes.
Yeah, yeah, great. Tragedy usually creates change, and that's kind of the sad part about it, is it's something where you wait until this crazy thing to happen for action to actually take place. But the thing I was getting at is, like, there's two things here. Fighter safety is paramount. But at the end of the day, fighters have to make weight. That's the second part of fighter safety, because it can't be unfair where you have a guy coming in overweight taking on another opponent. And this process is better for fighter safety because they can rehydrate more. But it's still a process where fighter safety is in danger because the weight cuts are still incredibly harsh. So I don't think it's that effective to keep it. On the other side of things, it's clear that more fighters are missing weight. It's obviously hard to pinpoint exactly why. I would say there's more. I would say, looking at these numbers, Jason, there is a dramatic difference in the amount of guys who have missed weight, men and women who have missed weight, after the move down than before, when you look at what Mike has thrown out there. So I don't think you can discount that. Obviously, the thing that is not being served on either side of the discussion is fighter safety. The culture around it is still really, really bad for one's body, and it's not really that much better, even if you have a little more time to rehydrate. To me, that's not dramatic enough to keep it as an early weigh-in when you look at how many more fighters have missed weight with these early weigh-ins. Even though people do know, there's probably some credence to the fact that bodies have their natural clock, their natural habit, and getting up and doing that at 9 a.m. may be different. So when you do look at the numbers, Jason, I understand what you're saying, and that there's plenty of other reasons why, but there is a dramatic increase in the amount of fighters that have missed weight since the early weigh-ins, and I think that's worth taking into account.
You know, I will say this, you know, the ABC meeting in next month in Orlando, I'm going to be there. I mentioned I'm going to do a special podcast. We're going to have an executive director roundtable. It'll be myself and three executive directors. And I can tell you right now, it looks like it'll be Mike Mazzulli, the head of the ABC, Andy Foster, the executive director of the California State Athletic Commission, and Kim Slumwer, who is the executive director of the New York State Athletic Commission. And I will tell you, weigh-in is definitely going to be a topic. You know, I think with Dana White, I wonder if he's read Andy Foster's 10-point plan. That'd be a really interesting note to know if he actually has read Andy's 10-point plan. But also, I think in terms of what can we do, or what can the industry do in terms of maybe changing the culture of this. And I know this on this podcast. How about you start the fines for missing weight 50% of your purse?
Yeah. I mean, that will probably play a role, but I still think guys are going to have that confidence and that, like Darren Till, when he accepted that last fight, he believed he was going to make 170. So I don't know if even such a severe consequence is going to really stifle it that much, because I do think these people have these outrageous self-beliefs for how much weight they can actually cut, Jason. I think it's more getting that natural weight that maybe Ramzanesian was talking about.
Yeah, here's my question about Darren Till. And, you know, look, obviously he had the family situation, but here's what I would wonder. What was Darren Till weighing 2 to 4 weeks out from the fight against Stephen Thompson in comparison to his fight against Donald Cerrone?
That's a great question. I would assume.
What if it was a what? Yeah, I mean, and I think that's got to be the assumption. And you know, and look, it's weigh in and weight. It's going to be continue to be a topic. And you know, I mentioned about Dana White being on that Unfiltered podcast. He did also mention that he was going to be meeting with Yair Rodriguez, of course, now back in the UFC. Also said that Ally Quinta versus Justin Gaethje is not happening, and basically notes that it's all on Ally Quinta. Apparently, Al looking for more money, which you can't blame him. Also, you know, he kind of noted in that interview that you know, you don't come to UFC to handpick fights, which I took as basically him saying that if you don't fight who we want you to fight, you're not going to be in our business, which at the end of the day, I think is kind of a bully mentality of saying you're going to take this fight, which I think ultimately that's got to be a manager and a coach's decision. If they're taking that fight, especially if you're just getting into the UFC, you don't want to go into a fight that's not a great matchup for yourself. So, yeah, it's, you know, at least I guess Dana White's talking about the UFC product, because sometimes I feel like he's just nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, it's crazy. Going on one podcast now is going to create headlines for the entire week because he isn't as available. But yeah, I'll tell you this much, Jason. There is 0% chance that Dana White has read every single letter in the Andy Foster plan. Okay, I believe that. That is one thing I believe. I think he's watched more, you know, hockey, a Vegas Golden Knights hockey than he has watched read that plan.
Yeah, I'm sure he has, but that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, if you ever have a question or comment, you can hit us up on social media. I am at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Of course, also, we do want to thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, hit up bluechew.com and use that promo code MMA Report. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Matt asks, was Charlie Strong given a raw deal at Texas? Considering how cleaned house and tore down to build it up, it seems that 3 years wasn't enough time. Who failed here? Charlie did clean up the culture, made him tougher. I thought he did a lot of good things. There is no doubt that he wasn't seen as a quote-unquote fit by some of the boosters. Listen, I don't think Charlie got a fair shake, but also know that Charlie had limitations as a coach too. What I think is that Tom Herman is a better fit for a lot of these boosters. You know, you can throw that any way you want, but he was a Texas boy, graduate assistant there, had a lot of contacts. He's kind of one of theirs. So you don't see hear the fat cat guys talking negatively about Tom Herman as they did Charlie Strong in the early stages of both careers.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.